Hare Krishna. Thank you for being with us this evening. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was roaming on pilgrimage through the forests of Vrindavan, he came to Govardhan Hill. The first Shila or rock from Giriraj that he saw aroused within his heart such transcendental ecstasy of prem that he embraced that rock. He was seeing, he was feeling his own beloved Krishna, the body of Krishna in his embrace as he wept incessantly in joy. Through this beautiful example, he taught all of us how to approach Krishna in these extraordinary ways that Krishna has manifested for us. When Lord Chaitanya was seeing Lord Jagannath in Puri, he would stand behind the Garuda Stamba, and sometimes he would actually see Jagannath in a threefold bending form, Tribhanga, with a peacock feather playing his flute. The holy name, the holy Dham, the deity in the temple, in various ways, Krishna is making his presence to the world. Krishna tells in Gita, Paritra naya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam. Dharma samstapana darya sampavami juge juge. That he comes to annihilate the miscreants, to protect the pious, and to re-establish the principles of religion. But beyond this, Krishna's deepest reason for coming to this world is to attract our hearts, to give pleasure to his devotees. Today is a festival that is celebrating all over Vrindavan. In every single temple, in every single home, ashram, in all the forests, this festival is being celebrated. Govardhan Puja. It is one of the happiest, most elaborate festivals of the year. And by the great compassion of Srila Prabhupada, our beloved Guru Maharaj, this same festival is being celebrated all over the world. In tens and thousands, perhaps hundreds and thousands of homes, in hundreds and hundreds of temples, celebrated the same way it is here in Vrindavan. When Srila Prabhupada was living in the Sevakunja area, in his simple rooms in Sri Radha Damodar temple, just beside the samadhi, the eternal residence in Bhajan Kutir of Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, it was his prayer that he could be the instrument of the will of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Thakur Bhakti Vinod, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. To take the great treasure of the realization of pure bhakti that has its ultimate realization in Vrindavan, to bring it to the world. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say that most people from India, they go to the West because they want to get the things of the West. Srila Prabhupada, he said, I have gone to the West to give the wealth of India. And the greatest treasure of the wealth of India is the path of devotion. And the capital of that spirit of bhakti is Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada did not leave Vrindavan to find or get something. He came to give something. Very interesting. He was almost 70 years old. He had practically no money. He didn't have any property. He was just renting those little rooms in Radha Damodar for a few rupees a month. And he was going to the wealthiest, most powerful country in the world because he saw spiritual poverty there. He went there to give wealth, to give that treasure that can bring true fulfillment to one's life. And part of how he was giving this great treasure of the culture of Vrindavan is he taught his followers how to celebrate these festivals. Today we are celebrating Govardhan Puja. Yesterday we were discussing Deepavali, where the Brijabasis, they were very busy preparing, not only celebrating Diwali itself, but preparing for the annual festival that was to take place the next day. Indra Puja. It's interesting. For generations and generations, that day was called Indra Puja. But since Krishna's time, nobody has ever heard of Indra Puja. It is Govardhan Puja. And the person who's most happy with this arrangement is Indra. And we will tell the story of why. Krishna promises in Bhagavad Gita, Konteya prati janihi name bhakta pranashi. He promises that he will protect his devotees. In matters of love, protection is not always what we expect it to be. Sometimes a parent will protect the child by punishing the child. Yes? Sometimes the father may mildly spank the child just to somehow get the child to take seriously. Not to hurt it, just to give it a little serious. At least, hopefully, like that. Now for the child is crying for protection from the father. Because he doesn't like to be chastised. But in matters of love, there is a higher purpose. What's actually for the benefit of the object of our love? Srila Prabhupada gives an example of a boy who has typhoid fever. And the doctor says to the mother, do not give him any solid foods or he will die. But the child has just as much appetite as if he doesn't have typhoid fever. So he's insisting to his mother, I want parathas. The mother says, no, 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 you cannot eat parathas. It is not good for you. And the child is crying, no, please give me parathas. Why are you so mean to me? Why do you hate me so much? Give me parathas. Why do you want me to suffer? Don't you want me to be happy? So the mother gives him parathas. And he dies. I guess it's a true story, because Prabhupada told us like that. What is love? Love is not just to please the mind and senses of somebody. Love is to actually do what is for benefit of another. So for Krishna's devotees, what is best for them is what is favorable for their Krishna consciousness. And the Srimad Bhagavatam describes dharmasya hipabhargyasya. In this verse, we have to be very careful that we shouldn't even be attached to the material results of our devotional service. That could be an impediment also. And it so often is. Sometimes when we perform tapasya, and we really put our heart and soul into engaging in some seva, sometimes we get really good results. And sometimes due to those results, we get a higher position, we get higher honor and respect, we may even get more and more power of knowledge, power of influence over others, power of management and organization. Sometimes these are external rewards for our accomplishments.
But Maya, she is there to try to somehow distract us in any possible way. Even engaging in devotional service, which is the process of actually humbling our hearts and serving in a spirit of total dependence on the grace of the Lord. Prakriti kriyamana nigunai karmani sarvasha ahankara itiyame. Krishna says that those who are bewildered by the modes of nature think themselves to be the doers of activities. A devotee, whatever we accomplish, we understand with grateful and humble hearts, by Guru and Vaishnav and Krishna's grace, I am allowed to be an instrument to accomplish this. So when Krishna sees a devotee being distracted in this way, sometimes he has to do the needful to wake them up. Indra is a very great devotee. We read in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Sanatana Goswami and other sub-scriptures, in the Swarga Loka region where he resides, when he performs yajna or devotional worship, the Supreme Lord Vishnu personally appears to receive his offerings. Physically appears. That is his power. And most of the whole community of devas or demigods are directly or indirectly under his command. And he has been given charge of the universal function, not only of overseeing the heavenly planets, but of rain. Everyone is dependent upon rain. Without rain, the grass cannot grow, the trees, the flowers, or any living being. We cannot survive without rain. Because rain is very much the nourishment of all varieties of food. And we have seen in some villages in India where there has been drought for many years, what type of suffering, what immense hardship people have to suffer. They would give everything for one good rain. It's very precious. If we're actually living closer to nature, in garden or farming, we are every day aware of how we're depending on rain. But when we live in the cities or in the towns or in the suburbs, when it rains, we think, oh, why is it raining? It's interfering with my fun. Because we're so out of touch. So Indra has such a position where everywhere people are honoring him and worshiping him because they need his help. Krishna sensed in his devotee some ahankar, some false pride. And he decided in his mind, when he saw all the elaborate arrangements for Indrapuja taking place by Nanda Maharaj and all of the gopas and gopis. With love, with compassion, he decided, I have to protect Indra. And also, he especially wanted to fulfill the desires of all of his devotees, the Brijbasis. So he was 7 years old at the time, and he approached his father, Nanda Maharaj, and inquired, can you tell me what is this endeavor that all of you are undertaking? What is the nature of this sacrifice? Who is it for? What is its purpose? How are you going to execute it? And what do you hope to achieve from it? Now, when a seven-year-old little boy asks this question, and you're really in the middle, because Nanda Maharaj is the king. He's ahead of everything. He's arranging. Some of us who have done organization of big projects, we know how you become really, really busy. And Krishna saw that he was preoccupied. So he said, We are family members. There should be no secrets. Please tell me everything. And Nanda Maharaj, in a very simple way, he explained that we are Vaishyas in the community of cowherd men and women. And our livelihood is in growing crops, the fruits of trees, vegetables, grains, and in all the gifts that the cow is giving us from eating the grass. And for all of these things, we require rain. Indra is the deva who supplies the rain. So every year on this particular day, the first day of the waxing moon, our forefathers have perform this Indra Puja to offer our gratitude to Indra and to satisfy him so that he will send sufficient rains. And when the sufficient rains come, then materially, culturally, spiritually, we can prosper because we'll have everything we require. It's like when somebody goes to the Ganges. They take water from Mother Ganga and offer it to Mother Ganga. In a similar way, we are taking grains that are born of rains. Indra's sending the rain. We're taking the grain from the rain and we're offering it to Indra. Nanda Maharaj said, this is very important. This is a religious principle, and it is also tradition, and tradition should be followed generation after generation. Krishna spoke in such a way that he knew Indra was listening. He said, my father, according to one's activities, one gets reaction. Those are the laws of karma. If we do good, then good things are going to come. Whatever rain is coming is according to our karma. Indra is just the executor of our karma. If we're good, we don't have to worship Indra. All we have to do is worship our good work. And Indra has to give us rains. We are living in a forest. We're not living in the cities or the villages. And in our forests, our livelihood is based on the milk of the cows,
the hard work of the bulls. It's dependent on the grass that is supplied by Govardhan Hill and the blessings of the Brahmins. So we don't have to worship this Deva Indra. We should simply worship the cows, Govardhan Hill, and the Brahmins. And let us take all the paraphernalia and all the food and everything else that you are about to worship Indra with to do puja for the cows, the Brahmins, and Govardhan Hill. Krishna wanted to teach, because Govardhan Hill is none different than himself. He wanted to teach that there is no need to worship various devatas or demigods when we actually worship the source of all the demigods. When you water the root of the tree, automatically that water extends to every leaf, flower, twig, and branch of the tree. So similarly, sarva karana karanam, when we offer our love and our devotion to the supreme cause of all causes, then naturally we perfectly fulfill the worship of every demigod. Devarshi Bhutatma, there's a beautiful verse in Bhagavatam that when you worship Krishna, automatically the worship of all the devas, our forefathers, the rishis, the sages, everyone is fulfilled, like watering the root of a tree. But ultimately, for Nanda Maharaj and the Brijabasis, they just wanted to make Krishna happy. So Nanda Maharaj agreed. And Krishna told him how to perform the Govardhan Puja. He said, we should make mountains and mountains of food called Anakuta. And we should have the Brahmins performing their pujas and their yajnas for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And then we should feed everyone. We should feed the Brahmins who are doing the yajnas. We should feed every types of society. We should feed even the poorest of the poor people. We should feed all the animals. We should get profuse grass and feed the cows. Then we should all dress very nicely and do parikrama, walk around Govardhan Hill. So the whole Vrindavan was immersed in preparing for the Govardhan Puja. Ananda Maharaj, under Krishna's direction, organized giant, giant mountains of bhoga to be prepared. Huge mountains of rice, massive stacks of rotis, huge mountains of various subjis, and there were kuns and lakes of kheer and all sorts of nectarine liquid bhoga. And all the Brijabasis, in their homes they were preparing these mountains. They were coming together at Govardhan Hill and preparing even bigger and bigger mountains. And everyone was so happy. And when all these mountains, thousands and thousands, so much food. At that time, Krishna, who was just a little cowherd boy, 7 years old, with his friends and his father and his mother, suddenly he manifested himself, expanded himself to be standing on top of Govardhan Hill. He had an enormous, unprecedented form. He was actually equal to the size of Govardhan Hill. It was like two hills right next to each other, but one was a living person. And then Krishna roared with a very, very sweet voice, I am Govardhan Hill. I have come to receive all of your offerings. And he did this to give everyone faith that Govardhan Hill and himself are non-different. Govardhan Hill is Krishna's body. Govardhan Hill is Krishna. In the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada explains that some people in their temples or in their homes, even a single little stone of Govardhan Hill is worshipped as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, we cannot just whimsically take stones. It is said that to take a Shila from Govardhan Hill, a few things are required to make it actually right without making aparads. The recommendation is you should put minimum the same weight of pure gold back on Govardhan Hill. And you should have the profuse, heartfelt blessings of the gurus and the superiors. And it should be given as a loving gift from a Brijabasi. These are just a few of the proper way to receive. Otherwise, we should worship Gornitai and come to Vrindavan to worship Govardhan, Govardhan Hill. So, Krishna assumed this magnificent form. And the little Krishna was looking at the big Krishna. And the little Krishna bowed down to the big Krishna, to the Giriraj Krishna. And Nanda Maharaj and all the Brijabasis, they didn't know what to do. They'd never seen anything like this. Govardhan Hill became a person, a mountain person, Giriraj. So they all bowed down. And then under Krishna's instruction, all the food was offered to Giriraj. And this wonderful personality of Giriraj, he assumed many hands and arms. And he started reaching out. There were long arms and short arms, and they were reaching in all 4, 8, 12 directions to receive the food. Very quickly, but very gracefully, he was picking up the mountains, he was taking in his hands the various lakes and kuns, and he was putting them all in his mouth. And the Brijabasis were watching this. This was incredible. Here was this mountainous form of Giriraj. He was reaching his arms all the way to Nandagram. Just to go into somebody's house and take their food. And as he was eating everything, and he was so happy doing, he was blissful. It was all going in his beautiful lotus-like mouth. The Brahmins and the Brijavasis, they were trying to cook more. And as soon as it was done, it was eaten. And soon there was nothing. There was not a grain of rice. There wasn't a drop of dahi. Nothing else. He ate it all. And with a beautiful, satisfied smile on his face, he called for more. Aniyor, give me more. But there wasn't any more. That village, even today, where Krishna was sitting to accept these offerings, is Aniyar. Because the nature of devotion is Krishna. He is hungry for our love. And the more we feed him, the more that hunger increases. And the more he's satisfied by our love, the more our hunger increases to serve him. That is the dynamics of the ecstasy of love. In the material sense, to be hungry is a dissatisfied situation. But in devotional service, it's an impetus to increase the reciprocation of affection. So Krishna was in his voice, mounted voice, was calling for more. And little Krishna, who was standing with all the Vrijavasis, he organized to offer Govardhan a tulsi leaf. Just a single tulsi leaf. And he said, I am satisfied now. And then Giriraj suddenly manifested all that bhoga again. After he ate it all and it disappeared, every mountain, every kund, all the ladus and samosas and everything else that was made, it all appeared again. And that extraordinary form of Giriraj disappeared. Now everything was Mahaprasad. And they distributed all that Mahaprasad. And oh, how they were having wonderful feasts. They were dancing and singing and playing musical instruments and eating the prasad. Such a festival. All for the pleasure of Krishna. And after prasad was distributed to everyone, all the cows, how beautifully they honored the cows on that day. Of all the limitless cows that were in Vrindavan, every single one, their horns were decorated with little balls of pure gold. And their hooves were decorated with pure silver. And their bodies were clothed with precious embroidered silk. And they were getting choice, delicious grasses and other such foods that the cows would eat, and giving them each cow to their full satisfaction, and each bull and each calf. And they were offering pujas to the cows. And by Krishna's arrangement, they circumambulated the cows. And then they circumambulated the Brahmins who were giving blessings. And the culmination of the day, after everyone was fed, it's with singing and dancing and laughing, the first parikrama of Govardhan Hill, led by Krishna. Some of the gopis, like Yashoda and Rohini, they rode on ox carts. Srimati Radharani, the gopis, they were also, many of them, on beautiful little carts or chariots going around Govardhan Hill. And Krishna and the cowherd boys, they were there with the cows and the calves with their little sticks, joking and dancing, going around Govardhan Hill. After the parikrama was complete, everyone was so satisfied. Every year before, Indra Puja was kind of a boring ritual. But this was really a happy moment because Krishna made everything so exciting and so full of love and full of color. And it was beautiful. Then they all went to their homes. And everyone was so happy, except Indra. Indra was furious. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Kama Esha Kuroda Esha Rajoguna Samudbhava. When there is Kama, Kama means that passion for selfish enjoyment. It could be sex. It could be, you know, some form of entertainment. It could be the greed to accumulate more and more. Or subtle kama is the desire for profit, adoration, or distinction. That was a very distinct sound. When these desires are frustrated, when they are unfulfilled, they cause anger, krodha. And anger is such a thing, it's like fire. It could be so uncontrolled that in the spur of anger, sometimes we lose our intelligence. The Gita explains, from anger, there's a bewilderment of memory. When the memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. When intelligence is lost, then we do foolish things. That's what happened to Indra. All the other demigods are watching, and Indra's waiting for his ceremonial puja from Nanda Maharaja's community. And he sees, and everyone else is seeing, that they're not giving it to Indra. They're giving it to cows and to a hill. He was insulted. And he totally lost his intelligence. He was so wild with anger that he called for the Samvartaka clouds. These are not just rain clouds. These are the clouds that are specifically and exclusively called upon for the purpose of the universal destruction. These are the clouds that pour so hard on the Earth planet that the entire Earth becomes one huge ocean. No land survives. It's all underwater. Total devastation. He called those clouds because he's their master. And he screamed at them, I have been insulted. And it's interesting. We were speaking yesterday about how the world is a mirror of our own consciousness. If we're seeing other people as being envious, if we sing other people for all these defects and faults, it's very likely we're seeing it that way because we have those faults. There's that simple saying, whenever you point one finger toward another, there are three pointing toward you. So we should actually, we should analyze ourselves at least three times more than we analyze other people as far as how to improve. So Indra, he's screaming out to the Samvartaka clouds and to the demigods of the wind and the storms. He's saying, just see what has happened to Nanda. Nanda, because of my grace, he has so much wealth.
His riches are enormous. So many crops, so many cows, and he trades it, he barters it, he has so much gold and so much jewels, he has so much wealth and so much power because of the wealth. And look at what has happened to him. Because of his influence and his riches, he has become proud. And because of his pride, he's dishonoring a great person like me in favor of a talkative little foolish mortal child like Krishna. Just see how he has become bewildered. He must be punished. He was talking about himself. But he's seeing the faults in others. The fact is, because of his wealth and because of his power, he was insulting the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he was listening to his own mind, which is just a foolish, mortal little child compared to Krishna. But when childish people with childish mentalities have enormous material power, they can be very dangerous. He ordered the clouds, destroy the cows, destroy the community of Vrindavan immediately. And Indra sent massive windstorms. Suddenly, here in Brajbhumi, there was this wind just blowing and blowing. And then they saw in the sky the Samvatarka clouds formulating. Massive, thick, endless, dark clouds. And the thunder. Everything was happening in stages. First winds, then clouds. Then the thunder was rumbling constantly in all directions. This thunder was so immense. It was rumbling with such depth that the world was shaking. And then lightning bolts were just flashing. Very fearful. They were flashing and crashing, flashing in the sky, flashing in the clouds, crashing down to the earth. Limitless thunderbolts. Then the rain began. When it began the rain, according to the Garga Samhita, there was limitless rain, and every raindrop was coming down at a massive speed, and each drop was the size of an elephant. Then, as the rainstorm accelerated, it wasn't even coming in drops anymore. The rain was falling from the sky in pillars, just pouring down. And then it became so windy and so cold that much of the rain became hail. Hail means it turned into ice. Massive solid ice balls the size of elephants were pouring down, limitless. The cows, they're out in the pastures with their little calves. The cows, their only thought was to protect their little calves. They were not thinking, oh, I'm so cold. They're thinking, what will happen to my little calf? And each cow, they have
that kind of hanging flesh under their necks. They were trying to cover their little calf's heads with that flesh, and they were putting the calf under their body to try to protect it from the hailstorms and the rain, and they were cuddling the calves to protect it from the cold, and seeing their calves crying and trembling, the cows were weeping, crying out helplessly for Krishna. And the bulls, the hail and the rain would come and crash down on their horns and the hump of their neck, and they bulls with very angry red eyes. They were very unhappy with Indra. It was such a helpless condition. Within a matter of seconds, the whole of Braj Bhumi was becoming a lake of water, totally filled. You couldn't see what was a high place and what was a low place. In that desperate condition, all the Brajabasis, they put the cows and the calves in front of them and all went to Krishna's house and prayed to Krishna. Krishna, Krishna Mahabhaga. Krishna, you're very great. This rain is tormenting us. It's causing us so much suffering. Look at your little cows who are so dear to you, how they are suffering. You promised to protect those who you are affectionate toward. Please protect your cows and protect us too. This is what they were praying. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains how the Brijbasis did not think Krishna to be God. But some of them have heard that Garga Muni said that your little boy, Krishna, he will be empowered by the strength of Lord Narayan to protect all of you in the times of the greatest dangers. So they were thinking Krishna just to be their ordinary little child. But because in certain situations, Narayan was giving him the strength to protect them, they all approached Krishna. And Krishna smiled. He was thinking of his devotee Indra. And then Krishna, he went from his house to Govardhan Hill. Usually, whenever there was some sort of demon or some sort of challenge to Krishna, he would prepare himself by tightening his belt. He had a cloth belt. It was tied. He would just retie it a little tighter, ready for action. But Krishna was so thorough. He knew Indra was watching. He didn't even bother to tighten his belt. This was really an insult. He just went to the hill. And by his yoga maya potency, the path that he walked from his home to Govardhan Hill, not a drop of water could fall. So by the time Krishna got to Govardhan Hill, his little turban and his golden dhoti and his beautiful little flower garden, there wasn't a drop of water on it. There wasn't even any dust on it from the winds. And then, like a little child, effortlessly lifts up a mushroom Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. And he held the Govardhan Hill in his left hand above his head. It also says in Srimad Bhagavatam, like an elephant holds a lotus flower. That is how effortlessly Krishna was holding Giriraj. Kavi Karnapur tells when Krishna lifted this mountain. Now, let us try to, through the process of Shravana or hearing, we could actually be there. Because the transcendental sound vibration of Krishna and Krishna's pastimes are non-different. To the degree we are absorbed in hearing these stories, we are actually there. Because they are timeless. It's a matter of bhava. It's not just a matter of geographical timing. Nitya Leela. So here we are in Vrindavan with all the Brijabasis and all this torrents of rain and wind and hail and freezing cold, and Krishna lifts this gigantic mountain. As he lifted the mountain from the ground, even though he did it effortlessly to separate the mountain from the ground, it made such massive sound that the earth shook. And Krishna lifted Giriraj above his head. And he smiled. And he said to all the Brijabasis, he said, everyone, please, if it is your desire, come under Govardhan Hill. Govardhan was so pleased with the offering of all the food we gave him and the artis and the parikramas. He was so satisfied with our devotion that now he is assuming. Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Wonderful to see you, Maharaj. His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj arrived just when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. Come to give us shelter. Krishna said, everyone, whoever so desires, come. Giriraj is so pleased with us. He has become a beautiful umbrella. And look underneath the hill. Everything just like our own home that we could ever want is right here provided by Giriraj. Everyone come. And Giriraj is so happy and he's so merciful that he's just floating in the sky to give us shelter. I'm effortlessly just putting my hand underneath. Everyone come and bring the most valuable things you have. So all the Brijabasis with their cows and their calves and their bulls and the most valuable possessions, they all blissfully stream together under Govardhan Hill. Oh, how beautiful it was. It was absolutely charming. You see, Krishna, he, through his different energies, made it the most beautiful experience. Because if we try to rationally try to understand, if all this rain is falling, from one sense, I mean, let's be a little mundane in our logic right now. It falls off Govardhan Hill, and then it comes down to the ground, and where does it go? Where does all the water go? And at the same time, in the places where Govardhan Hill is not an umbrella, the water's falling on the ground, and why doesn't it come and flood inside underneath the hill? Krishna arranged, he didn't even arrange it, it was just happening by his will. Sudarshan Chakra manifested himself to dry up the water after it hit the ground so it wouldn't go under the hill. Ananta Shesha made a circle around the bottom of Govardhan so that all the water that was falling off would not actually come off the hill. And whatever little water did come, it looked like beautiful pearls dropping to make it very aesthetically beautiful. So in this way, Indra could not get a single raindrop to go under Govardhan Hill. And as everyone was underneath this jeweled umbrella of Giriraj, they were all in a circle around Giridhari, this beautiful form of Krishna. It was a threefold form where Krishna was holding the hill with the little finger of his left hand. All the cows, all the calves, all the bulls, all the gopas, all the gopis, all the living beings of Vrindavan were gazing upon the beautiful face of Krishna. And Giriraj, Giridhari, he was gazing at each and every one of his devotees. Each one, their eyes, it was almost impossible for even them to blink. They were gazing upon the moon-like face of Krishna. Just as a chakora bird gazes upon the moon and drinks the nectar of the moon through its eyes into its heart. As Krishna smiled and glanced at each devotee, they were so satisfied that for 7 days and seven nights, nobody felt the slightest hunger or thirst. They never, ever wanted this wonderful darshan to end. And each devotee, according to their natural love for Krishna, Krishna was reciprocating with them. To those in Shantaras, they were simply gazing upon Krishna, beholding and loving, beholding his beauty and receiving his love and offering their love. For Raktak and Patrak, who are in Dasyaras, seeing Krishna lifting the Govardhan Hill in this way, they were doing every type of little service. Sometimes they were fanning him, and sometimes they were singing for him. And Sakyaras, his friends, Subal, Sridhama, Madhumangal, they were laughing with Krishna, joking with Krishna. Vatsalya Ras. They were in anxiety of love. Because of their parental affection, they were seeing Krishna holding this big mountain. Yashoda Mai, she was saying, Krishna, how could I tolerate seeing you like this? Why are you so mischievous? For so many years, for so many generations, we were having nice, peaceful Indra pujas. And you're so uncontrolled in your senses that you went and told us not to worship Indra, and now he's so angry, and now he's shooting all of these thunderbolts and all of this rain on us, and you're holding Govardhan Hill. It looks so heavy. Madhu Mangal, he was in a joking ras. Those with Vatsalya Ras were worried about Krishna. Those with Sakya Ras, they were just playing. Madhu Mangal said, Yashoda Mai, why are you saying like this? Why should we worship Indra? Look at what a fool this Indra is. Just because he didn't get what he wants, he's so envious and he's so angry, he's trying to destroy us all. Why should we worship a person like that? And now we are drinking the sweet nectar of seeing Krishna in his Giridhari form. What could be better than this? Yashoda Mai said, Madhu Mangal, why are you so impudent? Why are you saying this? What is so nectar about my little son standing, holding a giant mountain with his finger? Don't you see he's perspiring? Don't you see he's become pale? Don't you see he hasn't moved in so many hours? How can you say that this is nectar? This is causing such pain to my heart. Madhu Mangal said, no, Yashoda Mai, don't worry like this. Krishna is not lifting Govardhan Hill. I have chanted Brahminical mantras. And due to my mantras, it is upholding Govardhan Hill. Krishna is just standing there. Yashoda Mai said, why are you saying like this? I'm suffering and you're making jokes, and Krishna's standing, he's so fatigued, and you're making jokes about it. Nanda Maharaj, he said to Yashoda Mai, he said, why are you chastising Madhu Mangal? Krishna needs encouragement at this moment, and Madhu Mangal is giving him encouragement. Krishna said to Yashoda Mai, he said, Mother, there's no pain. There's not even an effort. In fact, Giriraj was so pleased by our puja for him that he is just floating in the air. Just as a formality, as an instrument, my hand is underneath him, but there's no weight. And Yashoda Mai, she said, Krishna, I will only believe that if Giriraj starts floating around in the sky and disconnects from your finger. How can I, as your mother, tolerate this? And then from the heart of her heart, Mother Yashoda prayed to Giriraj. She prayed, if I have ever done anything to please you, if I have ever done any pious deeds that have pleased Lord Narayan, offer me this one benediction. Krishna's hand is as soft as a lotus. As he's holding you, please be soft. And Krishna's arm is so small and so delicate. Please be very light so that he doesn't feel any pain. This was her prayer. It reminds us of Sachi Devi, who was Yashoda Mai in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. In Srivasangam, sometimes her beloved son, Nimai Gauranga, he would dance in kirtan. And he would be in such ecstatic samadhi of sankirtan. Sometimes he would jump way, way high in the air. And then he would go into a samadhi and just, boom, just fall to the ground like a bag of bones, as far as Sachi would see. And it would break her heart. And she prayed. She prayed to Lord Krishna. If ever I have ever done anything to please you, whatever pious credits, whatever devotional service I've ever rendered in this life or any previous life, I only ask one benediction. That whenever my little child Nimai falls to the ground like this, that he will not feel any pain. And the other benediction is when he falls to the ground like this, give me the benediction that I don't see it. So Krishna was lifting Giriraj. Yashoda Mai, she was in her Vatsalya parental motherly bhav. As Krishna was holding Govardhan Hill with his left hand, everyone was gazing upon him. The Brahmins were blessing him. The boys were making fun with him. And Sri Radharani and all of her gopis, they were just gazing into his beautiful smiling face. And through Krishna's glance and smile, he was fully reciprocating with all of their hearts' love. They were taking that form of Giridhari through their eyes into the very core of their hearts and embracing him. And Krishna, as he was standing there, holding Govardhan Hill, in the core of their hearts, he was embracing them. What a festival. 24 hours a day for 7 days, no one was separated from Krishna. Usually the cows would be in the pastures during the day, but then they would be in separation all night. The elderly gopas and gopis, they would be with Krishna in night and in the morning, and then all day they would be in separation. The boys would be all day and then all night. They didn't even sleep. They were just thinking about the day before's pastimes with Krishna and anticipating the next day. But now, and the gopis, they were always dreaming. When can we look at Krishna? To our heart's content, with no inhibitions. But now everybody, Krishna was giving himself fully to all the Brijbasis, constantly. As he was holding Govardhan Hill with the left hand, he took his flute with his right hand out from his cloth belt and put it to his mouth and played sweet songs. When Krishna plays his flute, it's the intimacy of the ecstasy of the love of his heart that's emerging from his heart coming through his mouth in the form of that air. It's not air, it's prem. It's his prem that's flowing through the holes of the flute and making that song. The vibration is simply Krishna's prem. Krishna, the love of Krishna for each and every one of his devotees is manifesting in the most beautiful music, the origin of all music. And whoever's ears that flute song enters into and goes down to the recess of their heart, Krishna personally, individually, uniquely reciprocates with that devotee, expressing his appreciation, his affection, his love, and receiving their love through that sound vibration. That is just a very superficial, external understanding of the depth of the experience of Krishna's flute. He began to play his flute. Oh, what a wonderful sight this was. Maru Mangal, he became very afraid. He said, I have seen anyone who hears the sound vibration of your flute goes into ecstasy. If Giriraj goes into ecstasy, then he may fall off your little finger, and then we will all be crushed to death. And I've also seen the effects of your flute. The river Yamuna becomes stunned as if it's solid, and stones and rocks and trees melt as if they're liquid. Giriraj, in his ecstasy hearing your flute song, he may melt in love. And then if he melts, we will all be drowned. Madhu Mangal requested, Krishna, please stop playing your flute. It could cause the destruction of the whole Brijabasi dynasty or community. And some other gopas were saying, no, they were enjoying the flute so much. They said, Giriraj is very grave. However ecstatic he is, he will maintain his stature and protect us. Nothing to fear. But listen to the sweet, melodious song of his flute and see him standing there, charming our hearts. As the rains were pouring, it is described that there were two storms, one above the hill and one underneath the hill. Above the hill, there were massive clouds, lightning, inundation of rain, rainbows. Underneath the hill, Krishna, his beautiful form of Giridhari, the complexion of a monsoon cloud, was like the cloud. His golden dhoti was like lightning. His peacock feather was like a rainbow. His glance and his smile upon the Brijabasis was like an inundating storm, showering them with love. And all of the Brijabasis were drowning in that love. Seven days and seven nights, Indra, when he saw that the most
destructive hurricanes, cyclones, tornadoes, any kind of windstorm, he was sending everything to somehow or other blow Giriraj off the tip of the little finger of Krishna's hand. But he couldn't do it. And Krishna was just a 7-year-old boy. It's not that he grew into a big size. When he became Giriraj, he did. But under the hill, he was just little Krishna. How is this possible? And with the clouds and the storms of devastation and all these winds, Giriraj, out of his pleasure, he actually expanded his body so that every single Brijbasi and all of their loved ones could fit comfortably underneath. Giriraj was very big. There were millions of trees on Govardhan Hill. And on each tree's numberless leaves and flowers. And on the ground, it was plush with fragrant green grass everywhere. In 7 days, on top of the hill, Indra did not have the power to even slightly move a single blade of grass. He couldn't even get a blade of grass to go like that. And he could not, and he was trying with all his might, with the same powers that destroy the universe, he couldn't separate a single leaf from a tree. He couldn't even move a leaf to go like this. And all the thunderbolts that he was personally, his vajra, his thunderbolt, his there are many prayers in the Vedic literatures about the power of Indra's thunderbolt. It's the analogy of the ultimate power of this world. He was continuously throwing his strongest thunderbolts on Govardhan, trying to get him to move. But because Krishna's little finger was underneath Giriraj, how much space does that occupy under this mountain? Because of Krishna's little finger, Krishna! Giriraj, Gopal, he was infusing through his fingers so much love that that love went through his finger right into Giriraj, the mountain, and totally permeated him in the ecstasy. He was just being filled, nourished with Krishna's grace. And he was in so much ecstasy that he didn't even notice that thunderbolts were crashing against him. Vishayava nivartante niraharasya dehena rasavara jamarasopasya param drispa nivartate. This is a very, very exalted example that the things that disturb us, temptations, aversions, attractions in this world, they become insignificant when we experience the higher taste bhakti, of love, love for Krishna, compassion for others. Govardhan was tasting Krishna's love. The experience of pleasing Krishna and feeling Krishna's pleasure through that little finger was so all-pervading within his heart that when he did feel the thunderbolts crashing against him,
It felt just like soft, fragrant flower petals falling upon him. When Krishna wants to humble his devotee, how expert and thorough he could be. 7 days and seven nights. According to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, once while Krishna was reciprocating with his devotees, Sri Radharani glanced upon him with such affection, and he was so attracted by her mahabhav, her love, that he began to perspire, his hair stood on end, and he trembled. And when he trembled, Giriraj started to vibrate. And all the gopas, the Vatsalya Bhav gopas, they were thinking, our little Krishna's tired. He can't do it anymore. It's too much for him. So they all got sticks and put it under the hill. And they were thinking that they were actually holding it up. And Maru Mangal and some of the Sakas, they said to their parent gopas, that what are you doing? Said, your sticks are just scratching the bottom of Govardhana. Our Gopal, he is the brother of Balaram. And Balaram takes great pleasure in heroic deeds of strength. He doesn't need our help. And the Braj Gopis, they were whispering among each other, the young gopis, that actually we know the secret of how Govardhan Hill is remaining on Krishna's finger. As Srimati Radharani, her Mahabhav, her pure love, is so dear to Krishna that through her glance, she is empowering Krishna to hold Govardhan Hill. And as they were thinking of this, and Sri Krishna could understand their hearts, Srimati Radharani showered a glance of affection upon him and a smile that completely satisfied his heart. When Indra saw, he couldn't even have the slightest effect on anybody. The Samvataka clouds, they strained and struggled with all their energies, and all the winds were blowing and blowing constantly. After 7 days, they were totally exhausted. They all fell at Indra's feet and begged, we are defeated. Let us go somewhere else. We can't continue. And Indra was so outraged, he himself charged with all his strength, all alone. Nothing he could do. And finally he became sober. And he realized who Krishna is. He's not just a little talkative 7-year-old ordinary boy. He's the absolute truth, Parabrahman. He's my master. Whatever strength and power I have is only coming through him. And I tried to destroy him and his whole community. In total shame, he left. All the clouds dispersed, the sky was clear, and the sun came out. And when Krishna saw it, he was still smiling. He never stopped smiling. He said, "Oh, my beloved family, Vrijavasis, now the rain has stopped and the sun has come through the clouds. Everyone now go back to your respective homes." Nobody wanted to leave, but it was Krishna's will. So the cowherd man and the cowherd ladies were leaving. And the cows, they were trying to herd the cows out. But the cows were so attached. They didn't even have to eat. The calves, they would look at the beautiful form of Giridhari and tears would flow from their mouths and they didn't even have to drink their mother's milk. That darshan was nourishing everyone's hearts. As they were being herded outside from underneath Giriraj, all the cows, they were outside. They all ran back in to be with Krishna. They couldn't give up his association. And Krishna, as he was lifting Giriraj, with his eyes, he moved his eyes in such a way to herd all the cows out from underneath Govardhan Hill. And when everybody was outside and had returned to their homes, Sri Giridhari very carefully placed Govardhan Hill on the ground exactly as it was before he lifted him. And then he returned to his home. The next day, the cowherd men, they all assembled together to meet with Nanda Maharaj because they had some questions. They asked Nanda Maharaj, "Your Krishna is wonderful. On one side, there's Govardhan Hill, this enormous mountain. And on the other side, there's a little 7-year-old boy whose body is so soft and tender, who cries for his mother's milk. And he's lifting for 7 days effortlessly. How is this possible? This is not the first time we have seen. Just days after Krishna's birth in Gokul Mahavan, the Rakshasi Putana, she came to murder Krishna. And little baby infant Krishna just sucked not only the milk from her breast, but sucked her life out from her. How wonderful. When he was only 3 months old, that gigantic cart filled with so many utensils, with his tiny little lotus-like soft foot, he touched the wheel and he destroyed it and liberated the Sakatasura, that ghostly demon. And he was just a baby of 1 year old, Trinavarta, picked him up after making a very devastating windstorm and brought him high, high, high into the sky. And Krishna became so heavy and held on to Trinavarta and squeezed his neck so tight.
tight, even though just a little baby, the Trinavarta choked and fell. When he was just a little boy, he showed the universe through the mouth of his of Yashoda. Through his mouth, he showed. And then after being bound by Mother Yashoda, he pulled the grinding mortar and ripped down those enormous Arjuna trees. And we were thinking, Gokul is a very dangerous place. Let us move to the Vrindavan forest. In Vrindavan, Vatsasura, this cruel, evil mystic, took the form of a calf to kill Krishna. And little Krishna took him by the hind legs, swirled him around, and threw him to the top of a kapita tree, where there were nice kapita fruits. And then Bakasura, the most envious and evil of all the asuras, he appeared as a mountainous crane. And your little boy effortlessly opened his mouth and opened it so much that the demon couldn't live. And then Kalia. Kalia, enormous serpent with so many poisonous hoods. And Krishna danced on his hoods. And ultimately, Kalia surrendered and became his devotee. And Pralambasura, he disguised himself as a little cowherd boy. And along with Balaram, he liberated him. And then there was that raging forest fire. After liberating and giving pure devotional service to Kalia, we all slept on the bank of the Yamuna that night in the forest. The fire was so engulfing that the flames were reaching the stars. On all four sides, we were surrounded by a thick wall of solid flames. And they were getting closer and closer. And when we turned to your Gopal, with one little tiny inhalation, he swallowed the forest fire. And today, Indra sent storms of devastation. And Krishna, smiling, lifted the mountain of Govardhan to give us shelter. Wonderful, wonderful Krishna. Who is Krishna? How does he do this? But most of all, the cowherd man said to Nanda, Krishna he attracts our hearts so thoroughly that 24 hours a day we could only think of Krishna, intoxicated with love for Krishna. We are so attracted to Krishna. And Krishna is equally attracted to us. Please tell us. What is the mystery of Krishna? Nanda Maharaj smiled. He said, during Krishna's name-giving ceremony, Vasudev, my dear loving friend, sent Garga Muni to perform the ritual. At that time, he told me a secret. He said that this child, Krishna, he has many names. He has appeared in this world many times to protect his devotees, to annihilate the miscreants, to reestablish true spiritual principles. He has appeared in a white form in Satyayuga. He has appeared in a red form to establish the Yuga Dharma in the Treta Yuga. And he will appear in a golden form in the Kali Yuga. In Satya Yuga, he establishes the Yuga Dharma, the recommended method of self-realization, which is silent meditation. In Treta Yuga, through performance of yajna, or elaborate, precise sacrifices. And in Kali Yuga, he appears in a beautiful golden form to establish the Yuga Dharma of Harinam Sankirtan. Kalerdo Sanide Rajan Astiheko Mahaguna Kirtanat Eva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Param Brajet. In this age of Kali, which is an ocean of faults, there is one benediction. That anyone, whoever we are, whatever we have done, whatever we have not done in the past, if we take shelter in the association of sincere and pure devotees, and with a humble heart chant the holy names, we will attain the perfection of liberation. And now in this Dwapar Yuga, he has appeared in this very beautiful dark bluish form, like a monsoon cloud, like a tamal tree. Citing from the Acharyas, I'm elaborating on what Gargamuni said. But Gargamuni said that this Krishna, he will be the object of the love and the affection of all the residents of Gokul. And he will protect you from the greatest dangers. Because the power of Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will manifest through Krishna. Please be very careful to take care of him. Nanda Maharaj explained this to the cowherd men. Even though they understood that the power of Lord Narayan was there to protect them through Krishna, still, their love in intimacy, madhurya bhav, was so sweet that they were always worried about Krishna's welfare. Even after the gopis saw Krishna lift Govardhan Hill, still, when he would be in the pasturing grounds with his bare feet, they would cry, thinking his feet are so soft, softer than the softest part of any of our bodies. When they're just touched, they change colors, different shades of pink. And he may step on a pebble. Just the thought that Krishna's delicate foot could step on a petal was causing pain to their heart. It was the ecstasy of the pain of love. Every day when Krishna would go out to the pastures, Nanda and Yashoda would go, they would follow him. They couldn't bear giving up his separation, and they couldn't bear the thoughts that in the pastures today there may be a hot sun that could inconvenience him. There may be a thorn or a pebble on the ground, or he may get hungry. They wanted to go with him. This is their love.
When Nanda Maharaj told the story of Garga Muni, everyone smiled. They were satisfied. Wonderful Krishna. Meanwhile, Indra could not sleep at night. Actually, as far as sleeping at night, the night when all those cowherd men, during the day when they met Nanda Maharaj, that night, it is explained by one of our acharyas that Krishna, Sri Radha and the gopis, the way they were gazing with such prem, such love at Krishna under Govardhan Hill, he couldn't forget it. So much he wanted to reciprocate. That night, he slept outside under the stairs on a terrace. He couldn't sleep that night. He didn't want to sleep that night. He was totally immersed in his heart of hearts, remembering the love of Sri Radha and the gopis. And under the stars, he played his flute all night long. And that flute song, it only went where he wanted it to go. It went exclusively through the ears into the hearts of the gopis, where they could feel Krishna was playing just for them throughout the night. For the Brijabasis, this was the most blissful festival. But Indra was humiliated and humbled to such a point that he was ashamed. What am I going to do now? This was quite an apparade. It's one thing to accidentally touch a person with your feet or to accidentally walk over a scripture on the floor or something. But he deliberately tried to destroy all Krishna's loving devotees. Agasura tried to destroy them all, but he was a demon. Indra's a great devotee. He was sleepless. His guru, Brihaspati, approached him. And Indra was desperate, totally helpless. He asked his guru, please give me instruction. Brihaspati said, Indra, you are an arrogant, puffed up fool. That's all. What else could he say? Because you have so much wealth and so much power, you became so intoxicated. Look at what you've done. The very person who gives you everything you have, you tried to destroy? There's nothing you could do. It's beyond me. The only recourse is you should go to Lord Brahma and ask his opinion. Indra went to Brahma Loka and he approached Lord Brahma, and his head was down. He was seriously depressed. But the greatest way to come out of depression is go to self-realized souls and get a spiritual solution. Brahma said, Indra, you are an arrogant fool. There's nothing I can do for you. It's quite hopeless. But Brahma said, but there's one thing you could do. No matter what offense you have made, if you go to a dear devotee of the Lord, and that loving, humble, dear devotee prays to Krishna on your behalf to be forgiven, then Krishna will hear your prayer. Otherwise, you cannot approach Krishna directly, not after what you have done. But Krishna loves the cows, and the cows love Krishna. There is a material planet in this universe called Goloka, and there resides Surabhi, who is the mother of the cows. Approach her to appeal to Krishna to forgive you, and he will forgive you. Here is the royal, majestic king of the heavens, Indra, approaching a cow, a mother, simple cow, and with tears. And Indra has a lot of eyes, so when he cries, it's quite a scene, actually. It's quite expressive. He prays to Surabhi, please help me. And because of her motherly nature, she's not judgmental. She's not philosophically scrutinizing what type of karma he's meant to get. She's just feeling compassion to him. She said, yes, let us go to Vrindavan. And they come. And where is today Surabhi Kund? That is the place that Surabhi the cow approached Krishna. Krishna wanted to give his mercy to Indra. And he wanted to do it in such a way that would not humiliate him anymore. You see, all the humiliation that Indra went through, that's what he needed, but he didn't need any more. So Krishna was so sensitive, so caring, that in the guise of going to just look at all the various parts of Vrindavan to see how everything was after the storms, he went to a secluded place all alone so that Indra could meet him in privacy. It was there at Surabhi Kund that Surabhi, the mother cow, approached Gopal. And she said, Indra is very sad, and he is sincerely repentant. Please show him your kindness. Krishna could not refuse the appeal of that motherly cow. And with Surabhi's indication, Indra directly approached Krishna. He fell in his dandavats, in his prostrated obeisance, and placed his golden jeweled crown on Krishna's little bare lotus feet. And he cried and cried. Krishna lifted him up. Indra, from his heart, He begged forgiveness.
Krishna is the Paramatma in our heart. He knows our intention, and he reciprocates according to our intention. Indra was genuine and sincere. He realized his mistake. He was surrendering his life to Krishna. He offered beautiful prayers. And in those prayers, he expressed how Krishna is so kind. Because of his intoxication with his power, his prestige, his position, his wealth, he became arrogant. And the nature of arrogance is we start comparing ourselves to others. We start thinking that I have the right to judge others. We start to feel fear that someone else may usurp what I'm getting gratification of having. And we become corrupted. Indra, in his prayer, said, Krishna, because you saw that I was diseased with this arrogance, you gave the perfect medicine to crush my pride into the finest powder and then throw it away. I only want to be your servant and serve you with love. Krishna was very pleased with Indra. And he spoke to Indra, yes, you were too puffed up. And Krishna explained to Indra the nature of pure devotional service and blessed him. It's interesting. Kaliya, he also tried to destroy Krishna. He killed all Krishna's friends. He created so much poison in that lake near the Yamuna that the cowherd boys and the little calves, they all died because of the poison. And all the trees of the forest of Vrindavan in that area died by Krishna's nectarine glance. He brought all the calves and the cows and the boys back to life. And then Kaliya tried to kill Krishna. He bit Krishna. Krishna just allowed himself to be bound up by his coils for a long time. And then he slipped out and danced on Kaliya's head and danced, and all Kaliya's wives and children and all the other serpents and everybody else was watching as this little boy was dancing and smiling and playing and killing, crushing every one of his head one by one. And when Kaliya was completely crushed and humbled, at that point, the Nagapatnis, his wives, they appeared and they prayed to Krishna, please give him pure devotional service. It was because the Nagapatnis prayed on his behalf, they were great devotees, that Krishna gave pure bhakti to Kaliya. In the same way, Surabhi, that motherly cow, we talked about the Yajnapatnis
The wives of those Brahmins, they were not big gurus. They had no big high position in society. They were not learned scholars. They did not go through gurukulas and great austerities. But by their prayers and example, their husbands too were delivered. One time, Srila Prabhupada was asked, what was our qualification to be given entrance into the path of pure devotional service? As the servants of the servants of the servants of Sri Radharani in the bhakti of Vrindavan, what was our qualification? Some of those devotees were hippies. What is a hippie? There's a beautiful film. I think Yadubar Prabhu and Vishakha Devi made the film where a reporter asked Prabhupada, can you show me some mystic powers? And Prabhupada said, my power is I have made hippies into happies. And they said, could you tell me what is a hippie? And Prabhupada said, you know better than me. But then he answered the question from the perspective of somebody who was living in Vrindavan, living in the highest culture of devotion and spiritual morality, ethics, and love. Prabhupada said, a hippie is something extraordinary. Now, there's all different kinds of hippies. But some of them that were coming to Prabhupada, they had no faith in God. Some of them were eating all kinds of anything, even animals, taking intoxications, having sexual relations without any type of spiritual relationship, anytime, anywhere. Some of them never even took bath. Never heard of Krishna. And now they're devotees, living by very high levels of pure morality, ethics, and dedicating their lives to the loving service of Krishna. Following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan, studying Srimad Bhagavatam every morning, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, which has descended from Goloka Vrindavan, coming on pilgrimage to Vrindavan to bathe in the dust of this holy place and in the Yamuna and all the kuns and the lakes, and offering prayers under the Kalpavriksha trees. What was our qualification? And Srila Prabhupada, very humble, but very honest, he answered. We should all listen very carefully to his answer. He said, because whether you're a hippie from San Francisco or whether you're a housewife or a business person from Bombay or a student from IIT, there is not much difference. Prabhupada said, you had no qualifications. I made your qualifications. We should never forget that. It was his willingness to leave Vrindavan without any assistance whatsoever, without anyone to help, and to cross continents and oceans on a cargo ship In Srila Prabhupada's purports of the 10th canto, the Brahma Vimohan Lila, he explains when he was on that little Javaduta going across the Atlantic Ocean. He said he felt the Javaduta to be like a little vulnerable matchbox floating in the ocean. Not long ago, I was in America and I gave a lecture. And after the lecture, I went to somebody's house. And I was introduced to a very interesting person. He was an elderly Indian gentleman. And he told me that he was a captain in the Scindia cargo ship lines. And he was the captain of the Jaladuta on many of its voyages from Calcutta to New York and back. He said he wasn't on the voyage that Prabhupada went. I asked him about the Jaladuta. He said in 1965, it was already an old, beat-up old cargo ship, and soon after that, they scrapped it. I asked him, is there any remnants? Wouldn't you like to have a piece of the Jaladuta? He said, it was a long ago, I don't know. And after coming to New York and Butler, Pennsylvania, how he struggled and how he... It was his compassion. It was his love for Krishna, his love for Radha, his love for Vrindavan, his love for his guru and our guru parampara, and his love for all of us. That was our qualification. And for the people of India, he wanted to reach the people of India so much. But he saw there was such a craze toward westernization. If I bring some Western people, and they believe in Krishna, and they tell the Indian people, Krishna's so good, we're giving up all the things that you're coming to the West for because we want Krishna, then the Indians will take their own culture very seriously. And the amazing thing, it actually worked. Now, there are so many Indian devotees who are inspiring other Indian people. That's no doubt. But the seed was Srila Prabhupada coming back with some of his followers to ignite that flame which became the blazing fire of bhakti throughout India and throughout the world. Indra, with all of his wealth, with all of his mystical cities, he's a great yogi. With all of his knowledge of the Vedas, he couldn't approach Krishna. But when he humbled himself before the mother cow, because of her devotion, her simplicity, that was his qualification. Indra told Krishna that I may be considered the king of the heavens, but you are the king of all kings. And it is my great wish and the wish of all the devatas, the demigods, we want to have an abhishekam and coronate you, the King of all the Devas, the King of all kings, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We want to recognize that. And Krishna agreed. And the Abhishek began with Surabhi, bathing Krishna with her milk. That milk is not just some milk that's digested grass coming through her udder after the process. That is the milk of her gratitude, the milk of her love. She is bathing Krishna with her love. And the place where that Abhishek took place is called Govinda Kund. And Indra proclaimed in the spiritual world of Goloka, the highest planet, your name is Govinda. Now here on earth, in this universe, we want to proclaim you as Govinda. Airavata, the carrier of Indra, brought the water of the Akash Ganga, the celestial Ganges from the heavenly worlds, and bathed Krishna. And Vashishta Muni, Arundhati, Atri Muni, Anasuya, the great rishis and the sages and the great yoginis and the wives of the sages, they all offered Krishna beautiful gifts. Brahma, Shiva, Varuna, Vayu, Chandra, Surya, they all assembled at Govinda Kund to perform the Abhishek of Krishna and beautiful prayers. And then they clothed him with beautiful ornaments and offered the arti. And then with his permission, they departed. And the little cowherd boys, they came and found Krishna there at Govardhan Hill. And there was celestial arti paraphernalia and incense and chamaras fans from the heavenly worlds. And they were just little children. They put Balaram next to Krishna and they started fanning Krishna and they started offering him the artis and they were just joking and laughing and playing. And when the demigods, the devatas, looked down, because they were worshiping Krishna with great reverence, and they saw with the same ingredients, the little cowherd boys, they were doing it with such innocent, sweet, spontaneous playfulness. They were offering their love to Krishna. The demigods realized, compared to these little children, we don't have any love at all. We don't have any realization at all. They are the real great souls. And Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, when they came and saw the children worshiping Krishna in the village of Braj, the voice of the devas came from the sky and told Nanda, we have made Krishna Govinda the king of all the gods. You should make him Brajraj, the king of Braj. Oh, you're the king of Braj. Make him the prince. So Nanda Maharaj offered his love to Krishna in the form of so many devotional offerings. And Yashoda Mai, with her sweet motherly heart, offered the arti. We are going to be doing the Damodarastakam. When we offer this flame, yayatamam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyam, Krishna accepts according to how we approach. It could be just a simple ritual, or it could be the profound, most deepest meditation in all of existence. It's the flame of our intent to love Krishna. Like Raghunath Das Goswami, who lived just near Sri Govardhan at Radhakund. He left behind everything that everybody could possibly want in this world, just to sleep under a tree near Govardhan Hill, thinking that this was the greatest ultimate blessing in his life. When we offer this flame, it's actually a meditation of surrendering our hearts, our body, our minds, our lives, everything for Krishna's service. The lamp of our love we're offering, praying that Krishna will accept it. And when he accepts it, when he accepts the sincerity of our devotion, he illuminates our own hearts. And only when he illuminates our hearts in proportion to our sincerity, then we could see who we are. Jivaraswarupoi Krishnera Nityadas, eternal servants of Krishna. Nityasiddha Krishna Prema Sajja Kapunai. And then we can actually appreciate Krishna's love for us and our love for Krishna. This is the wonderful lesson of Govardhan Puja. Thank you very much. Thank you.